First of all, what are fairies? Certainly not the cutesy Tinkerbell from Peter Pan. The Scots and Irish, who have had some dealings with the fairies, will probably argue they are just like us. Put aside all of the slightly mad definitions some readily accept and hold fast to, and open yourself up to the historical accounts of the fae folk. They can indeed appear just like you and I. From here on in this podcast, I may refer to them more accurately as the Shee, as they tend to be known in the Celtic nations. It is odd indeed how the stories of the Shee are predominant in the parts of Britain and Ireland where the Celts settled. Even their fear of iron is said to be derived from the early Celtic settlers who brandished iron swords. What is generally accepted is that fairies are said to inhabit, or at least to be found in the woodland, inhabiting lakes, hills, living near stone circles, and generally they reside in their kingdom, Fairy, which lies underground. And close by, you might find the doorway to Fairy. Scotland's famous Hill O'Doon at Aberfoyle is where one such doorway is said to exist. The legend says that if you wander around the hill three times widdershins, the doorway to Fairy will reveal itself to you. Widdershins, of course, is in a direction contrary to the course of the sun, that is, counterclockwise. It's considered as unlucky to walk widdershins around anything religious. This is very similar to the ancient Scottish belief that if you walk three times widdershins around a church, you will meet the devil. In fact, some would argue that it is unlucky to walk widdershins around a church for any reason. So much so that performing the ritual of circling, as I've heard it called, is generally believed to reveal an entrance to the other world. Kit's Coty House at Aylesford, Kent, in England, has a similar belief involving a chambered tomb. Kit's Coty, as it's also known, is a chambered long barrow near the village of Aylesford in the south-eastern English county of Kent. In that tradition, if a personal object is placed upon the capstone and the donor of it walks three times around the monument, then the object will disappear. The ritual must be carried out on the night of the full moon, naturally. In that case, the circling ritual is probably an old belief based on propitiating a spirit. So just why do we have such rituals generally at megalithic sites? And why are they so established in the traditions of interactions between humans and the Shee, as well as in witchcraft and dealings with the devil himself? Circling was an accepted part of supernatural summonings and in divinatory rituals, but in general it was believed that it would open an entrance to the other world. Another good example of circling, which has come down to us in oral history, can be found at Chanctonbury Ring Hill Fort in Sussex. Chanctonbury Ring is a prehistoric hill fort atop Chanctonbury Hill on the South Downs. In this case, if on a moonless night you walk seven times around the ring without stopping, the devil will come out of the woodland and hand you a basin of soup. That would be very nice of him on a cold evening. Other oral accounts have said that he'll hand you a glass of milk, or even that if you run three times around the ring, Satan will appear and offer you porridge from his bowl. So the timing of these events seem to be based around Midsummer Eve and Midsummer Morning. So generally, these are a form of summoning, but may also be some part in propitiating local spirits with offerings. For most people, let's call them the unenlightened. Fairies have become part of children's magical fiction, but to the curious, as in centuries past, many adults are open to the belief in the existence of fairies. Instead of Disney's cutesy, diminutive pixies, fairies were feared and could be lustful, nasty and cruel creatures, as likely to kill you as lead you out of the forest. Fairies could be benevolent, but they could also be capricious and vindictive. Travellers on long journeys would bring offerings to leave for the fairies, typically bannocks, that's a kind of bready cake, tobacco or fruits. In return, the fairy folk might provide good weather or safe passage from wild beasts and highwaymen. So to some degree, they were also spirits of the weather and nature and gave travellers some protection. Now, if you didn't give such offerings, well, your plans could go awry. and you might find yourself on the bad side of a fairy, and who knows what could befall you, from terrible tempests to even the death of family members. The fairies were vengeful creatures who sought revenge. In fact, even to mention fairies was enough to incur their wrath, and for that reason, they were often referred to indirectly as the gentle people or the good folk. Perhaps not so gentle or good, when they had your fate in their hands. In fact, the she can be vengeful, manipulative, and are somewhat easy to offend. But it's not all bad. In Scotland, we also have brownies. These are household spirits or hobgoblins, which come out at night while the owners of the house are asleep and perform various chores and farming tasks. Ditch the Roomba and get yourself a brownie or two. In fact, the fairy realm, some might argue, not me, today encompasses a wide variety of supernatural creatures from many different countries. I hold to the historic view that the she are the she, and they can be both good and bad. While others lump them in with other phenomena like brownies, will-o'-the-wisps, ballybogs, selkies and kelpies. Selkies and kelpies, for instance, never have good intentions towards humans. Even today within Scotland, I know of a family originally from South Uist who claim to be descended from the fairies. This is perhaps evidenced by their own oral testimony. Most of the time they were pretty normal people to deal with, but generally the sons were short to temper and a little vindictive when it came down to it. In their favour, they had a strong, almost inherent understanding of woodland and woodland creatures. Were they descended from the she, or more accurately, tinkers? But then, are the she and the tinkers one and the same? Certainly the family I am referring to have strong Pictish Celtic characteristics. My own grandmother was a Highlander. She had similar throwback characteristics, and her clan is generally defined as being Picto-Nordic. If I'm a little bit fey myself, I guess that's where it comes from. Some might even argue that Scottish tinker folk are the remnants of the fairy folk. Almost certainly, they are the remnants of the ancient race who lived in Scotland prior to the arrival of the Celts. I have known of a tinker family. They look just like you and me. In fact, my sister as a child was friendly with a tinker girl about the same age. My mother, years afterwards, always remarked on how beautiful the tinker girl was. Generally, in my lifetime, many have moved into regular houses and joined normal society. Fairies were also associated with changeling beliefs. It was said of them that sometimes they'd secretly swap sickly fairy babies for healthy human ones. They can even seduce and marry humans. Tales of such marriages rarely went well. One astonishing story involves a famous murder in Ireland. In 1895, a woman named Bridget Cleary was killed by her husband. His defence was that she was not really his wife, but instead a changeling that was brought to him by the fairies. In 1691, the Reverend Robert Kirk gave us his book, The Secret Commonwealth of Elves, Fauns and Fairies, which is the main resource for fairy lore. He argued that the fairies he had often met on the Hill o' Doon were the descendants of the people who had built the ancient tumuli found in Scotland's hills. That would include standing stones, Iron Age forts and other curious earthworks. I visited many such things and would be the first to argue that they are magical. In the case of the Hill o' Doon, there are in addition the remains of some standing stones, and what's left of the native forestry there would certainly suggest a collection of trees which the ancient druids considered to have spiritual or magical properties. The arrival of the Celts to those islands would change things for the native inhabitants, who would withdraw and live apart in the woodlands and in the hills. Hence, we have the roots of fairy lore. It is said that the Reverend Kirk was found dead on the Hill o' Doon inside a fairy ring. It's thought best never to stand inside one if you can help it. Generally, paintings of fairies and fairy rings show the magic mushroom, known as fly agaric, very dangerous mushrooms, toxic even, which should not be consumed. Such rings often grow where a tree has died. Some also believe fairy rings are portals to the fairy realm. Time is said to pass slowly in fairy rings. Centuries could pass outside, while only seconds passed inside. So, having established, I hope, some historical evidence for the existence of fairies, we arrive at the question, how can we work with them? Learning something about the nature of the Shi is an excellent start to building a good relationship with them. I feel there are similarities here to the ancient Roman practice of propitiating Lares and Penates in their homes. The Lares and Penates were thought to be the souls of the dead, who were worshipped by the ancient Romans as guardian deities of the home and domestic happiness, protecting the homes and their inhabitants from misfortunes. So how might you go about inviting the Shi into where you live, your home, or your garden? What is generally believed of the Shi is that they like shiny things. Also, being inhospitable and selfish are frowned upon among the Shi. Best not to make them unwelcome. Like the Roman Lares and Penates, you can set them up a place to leave them offerings. The shinier the better. They like crystals, shiny stones, shiny coins, single earrings, twinkling lights, and even Mardi Gras beads. I've heard of offerings of whiskey and honey. Fairies are also known to be a little light-fingered, particularly if it's a shiny object, or they might just move something of yours. That's them just being playful. The way to get it back is easy. Place a shiny coin, the size of a dime or a British 5 pence piece, under a clear glass tumbler or jar. Promise them you will let them have the shiny thing once they give you back whatever it is they have taken, or simply give them an offering of some whiskey. But it's not all Disney, I'm afraid. Perhaps you're of the mind that they are better avoided. There are some things best avoided in your dealings with the Shi. The best protection against the unseelie Shi is traditionally to wear something made of iron. Iron is said to burn the skin. Other protections include a Christian cross or salt. So, having wandered Widdershins 3 times, or 7 times, or any amount of times, around the Hillowdoon, or some other fairy place, and the doorway to fairy has revealed itself to you, what now? Here's a quick traveller's guide to the land of fairy. Don't eat the food that they give you. Eating their food will keep you prisoner in the land of fairy. Consider the fate of Persephone for eating some pomegranate seeds in the kingdom of Hades. The Reverend Kirk, as we discussed already, was captive in fairy, and the only way that could have set him free was to have thrown a dagger over the head of his apparition back in our world. Never give a fairy your name. Names give them power and control over you. Give them a fake name. Remember how in the fairy tale, knowing the name of Rumpelstiltskin gave the queen full power over him. If you know a fairy's name, say it. Then they will leave you alone. Be careful what you accept from a fairy in way of a gift, unless you trust the fairy who gave it to you. It is best to destroy it. Best also never to say thank you for a fairy gift, since that implies you owe them something. Consider the story of the MacCrimmon fairy chanter. The MacCrimmons were the hereditary pipers to MacLeod of MacLeod. The younger MacCrimmon's son once rested near a bucking brook, that's a fairy knoll, which opened. Hearing the music playing, he went inside to join in the merriment, but at the sound of his playing, the dancing stopped, and all the other players put down their instruments. The king of the fairies asked him what he wanted, so that he would leave them to their revelries. The boy answered that he wanted to be a good piper. To get rid of him, the king gave him a black chanter, which when put on his bagpipe would allow him to play better than any mortal. But then, just as the boy was leaving, the fairy king asked, "What do you wish? To enjoy your music, or that others enjoy it more?" To which the boy replied, "I wish that others would enjoy it more." The king said, "Granted." And so it was that as fine a player as he became, never was he satisfied with his playing, and always sought to improve, and craved that his audience enjoyed it more. There's always some catch when it comes to fairy gifts, so tread carefully.